This is the Bless You Boys podcast. Bless You Boys is the home for the best, the worst, the indifferent, and everything else in between in Tigers baseball on the SB Nation platform. I'm your host, Brandon Day. I'm a staff writer and editor at Bless You Boys. And with me tonight is Rob Rojacki, our managing editor. How's it going?
Not too bad. Ready to go.
All right. So, like, the Tigers didn't really do much besides signing Alexi Amarista and adding another kind of utility player candidate into the mix. But we did get a bunch of prospect lists out this week and kind of figured we'd dive right into that. I mean, kind of the first thing that stood out sort of was Baseball Prospectus kind of having Daz Cameron and who is it? Was it Jake Rogers or Isaac Paredes above Matt Manning and kind of dropping him down to sixth. Does any of this mean much to you? You know, is this the kind of thing that makes you wonder how he's doing or anything like that? Or
no, I'm definitely not worried about it. I mean, I was we had come out and published a post right after that saying, like, you know, it's way too early to really worry about him. The biggest reason that Baseball Prospectus had dropped him down was because they had seen a couple outings of his in, I think it was like July or so, where he was down kind of in the 80s with velocity. And that type of thing is going to happen. I kind of went back and found the actual reports that they had filed, and their top prospect guy is based in New York or around that area. And so he's been to some of the, you know, New York Penn League stops quite a bit. And so Manning, I mean, I was kind of following along because he was tweeting about it all along, saying, like, you know, he was excited to see Manning for obvious reasons, and then was a little bit disappointed when he had come out into that. And so they're kind of basing a lot of it on those couple outings without, I don't necessarily want to say following up, because it's so hard to, you know, keep track of every single start of every single player in this industry. But they, you know, I think that those outings definitely heavily skewed things. When, you know, there were clearly, I think, some improvement from him down the stretch, especially as he moved up to West Michigan and he, you know, really kind of found his form after those first few starts. So definitely nothing to worry about yet. Obviously, Manning's, you know, a very, very high risk prospect, especially for even for like someone coming out of high school, because he's hardly played baseball at all and he's still kind of getting the basics down. But this is a guy who, you know, can reach back for 97 miles an hour with little effort. And that type of arm just doesn't come along very often.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, you kind of pair that with, you know, just the length and extension, you know, the plane he can get from being, you know, 6'6". Yeah, I mean, kind of the raw ability there is still really impressive. And, you know, I was kind of following on Twitter and listened to the last, you know, few games he pitched for the Whitecaps this season into the postseason. And it sounded like he'd really put it all together because, the reports that were filed earlier in the year just didn't match up at all, you know, to the guy we were seeing late in the year. Like, the curveball looked really pretty sharp. He was just dusting people with the fastball left and right.
And even just like in a vacuum, it doesn't make sense. Like, how would a guy who's throwing 85 miles an hour the fastball, who doesn't have polished secondary stuff, be able to go out and strike out 10, you know, single A hitters in an outing? I mean, they're still in single A, but those guys can time 80, 85 like it's nothing. Obviously, when you get up to 95, they have trouble, but, you know, that kind of tells you exactly what was happening there.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, just the whole process of trying to evaluate, like you say, especially a guy who doesn't really have the experience a lot of other prospects come with. Like, so many of these guys are used to kind of pitching showcases, even when they're in high school. You know, there's kind of an awareness of when the scouts are in the stands and when you need to show out and this kind of thing. And it just feels like, you know, that none of that has anything to do with, you know, with Matt Manning's progress at this point. And you might see a start or two still even this year where he's wild or the mechanics are off and stuff, but when you see kind of the ceiling starting to form when he's really going good, it's still, you know, pretty plainly obvious why the Tigers took him where they did. Full disclosure, I just got off the phone with Matt Manning actually and was talking to him, and he had a couple of interesting things to say. We'll have a post up, you know, should be tomorrow on that. But, you know, he was basically saying the same thing, that he's really like dead set on throwing strikes and kind of perfecting his mechanics. And that was a lot of what was going on in July was him just kind of trying to dial all that in. And that he's also, you know, they've also kind of had him working on changing speeds and trying to pitch with less than his full fastball. But he was kind of chuckling that, you know, he knows he can reach back for 97 whenever he wants to, but that's kind of, you know, not that's throwing and not pitching, and he was definitely talking about, you know, really wanting to focus on becoming a pitcher. So
yeah, I mean, they kind of get to mold this guy from the ground up. I mean, you get basically like your perfect specimen in terms of like a physical guy that you want to be a starter. I mean, he's got the same build as, you know, basically a Justin Verlander, and you get to kind of build that guy up from the ground up. And it'll be interesting to see, A, how well the Tigers are able to do that, and B, kind of what the finished product ends up being. You know, if he does pan out, I mean, this is a guy who has that type of ceiling. He can be a true number one starter. He has the highest ceiling, I think, of any arm in this farm system. He's just, you know, so far away from that right now that he's just such a high risk as a prospect. And I don't blame Baseball Prospectus at all for dropping him down that low. You obviously have to go on what you see as an evaluator. They just kind of, you know, seems like they saw some of the wrong stuff. You know, and it could also just been fatigue at that point too. I mean, this is full season of pro ball, or his first season of professional ball, not even a full season yet. We're probably going to see starts like that next year, especially if he goes in, you know, right at the start of April to West Michigan. So there's going to be a lot of bumps along the road, but hopefully he comes out of it in the end, you know, in the Tigers rotation.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I mean, I don't really think there's anything particularly to worry about, Matt, that, you know, that wasn't there, you know, from the beginning, just the rawness. But it is kind of an interesting case just because it kind of illustrates just how hard it is, you know, to cover prospects, you know, effectively and to see these guys enough to really get a good, you know, a good grasp. You know, I kind of mentioned to him that, you know, I think it was Baseball Prospectus kind of mentioned that they'd seen him kind of throw a fastball with cut action on it. And, you know, from his perspective, that was just a bad fastball. You know, it was just a fastball that, you know, he just didn't have his mechanics sharp, you know, didn't release it out in front or something, and it just kind of backed up on him. And if you see that a few times, you know, it's just really easy in one viewing or two viewings to mistake that for something that, you know, the Tigers are trying to work on. It just, you know, I just thought the whole kind of little arc there was sort of instructive about how hard it is to cover prospects. The other thing interesting he mentioned was that, I guess Jorge Cordova, the pitching coach for the Whitecaps last year, showed him a split changeup, and they kind of moved him away from a circle change, and he just felt way better with that, and was getting a lot more down action. And as long as he keeps his arm speed up, he's got such huge extension that pitch should play pretty well. So that was kind of an interesting tidbit he threw in there as well.
Yeah, you have to be interested in seeing how that affects like his elbow. Apparently, like a split change can be a little bit more strenuous on that. But if they're able to, you know, keep him healthy, that's definitely a great pitch for him to develop. He needs that third pitch right now, along with the fastball. And what's he throwing? Kind of like a spike curveball.
Yeah,
right,
I think it's still a spike.
Something like that. We'll see what happens with that going forward. Sounds like that pitch isn't always, you know, not a lot of people were teaching it. But hey, if it works for him, you know, who's to change it, really?
Yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, I know Keith Law was kind of, you know, of ESPN was kind of on about the spike, you know, curveball grip last year, in a couple articles. But, you know, then again, you know, you look at guys like Corey Knebel, that, you know, there's, I think Lance McCullers as well throws like a really hard, you know, spike curveball, you know, like in the mid 80s. And that,
yeah, one that we saw how many times in a row during the playoffs?
No, it was like 20, 25 or something, and they still couldn't do anything with it. So, yeah, it's funny, you know, like these trends can kind of happen where, you know, I've been kind of reading, you know, that the sinker has kind of been getting hit more around the league over the past year or two as all these kind of guys are trying to, you know, take a little bit more of an uppercut swing at it. And, you know, maybe that switches things back to the point where it's, you know, the high fastball and the curveball is more the dominant combination than the sinker, mm-hmm. sinker splitter or sinker slider. But yeah, it's just interesting kind of the way those trends kind of work. Obviously for a pitcher, they've just kind of got to take what works best for them and kind of roll with it. Was there anything else on that Baseball Prospectus list that kind of stood out to you? Or Keith Law's list, actually? You know, he had Daz Cameron ranked in the top 100, which
That's kind of the big takeaway there, is to see Cameron in the top 100 of that list. It'll be interesting to see where he lands on Baseball Prospectuses. I don't think he'll be in the top 100 there, but he may be kind of on the outside looking in for that. You know, it's just great to see him kind of getting some love too. You know, I took a look back at some of his numbers last year, and he was just a monster towards the end of last season and in the second half at single A ball. You know, it really kind of reversed all of the concerns that people had about him heading into the 2017 season. You know, obviously he doesn't have quite the tools that his dad did, especially not the power and the speed, but he still could be, you know, a plus defender with, you know, some solid speed on the bases. It sounds like he has great instincts, which you kind of expect from a son of a major leaguer. And then, you know, if the hit tool and some of the power can come around and he can kind of be, you know, you have almost kind of a, you know, a five-tool player on your hands. I mean, he started to pull the ball and hit the ball in the air a little bit more, and that's a huge step for him. He may not hit a lot, you know, in terms of average at the MLB level, but if he can kind of be that guy who, you know, hits some home runs, draws some walks, and plays plus defense in the outfield, like almost kind of like a B.J. Upton type when he was good, that's a hugely valuable player.
Yeah, or maybe even, you know, a little bit Austin Jackson like, with maybe a little more patience, but maybe a little bit less speed.
Yeah, say maybe a little bit less speed, a little bit more power there. I mean, you know, almost kind of just a poor version of Mike Cameron, if you want to call it that too. So,
yep, I would take that. That would be great. But, you know, sure. Like we've been kind of lamenting the fact that, you know, the Tigers have all these pitchers. We're not lamenting that part, but that there haven't been so many position players. So it's been nice to see, you know, just some of the love that's kind of come Daz Cameron's way. And,
and
Isaac Paredes as well.
I expected Paredes to get more of the love because, you know, he's an 18-year-old who held his own in single-A ball last year. That's not an easy feat. You don't always see that a lot. The last Tigers prospect to do that was Willie Adames, who ends up at, what, like number 20 or around there on some of these lists, like 15th, 20th in all of baseball. You know, obviously the Tigers did what they had to do when they traded him, and you can't expect him to kind of really take this leap that he has since leaving. But if you can turn Paredes into a guy like that, or Gleyber Torres, who he was also compared to in the Cubs system, I'd certainly take one of those guys.
Yep. That'd be perfect, especially because, you know, we haven't really brought along a middle infielder in a really, really long time. So yeah, I'll be looking for him. You know, I'm interested to see Fangraphs list come out too, just because, you know, they've got Kylie McDaniel back in there, who has been working in the Braves organization. And I know Eric Longenhagen pays pretty good attention to the Tigers system as well. So
yeah, and those guys see a lot of stuff. I mean, they, you know, I know Longenhagen is based in Arizona. You know, that's kind of been another thing, interesting thing about following some of these lists too, is kind of knowing where some of these guys are based and being able to kind of pick and decipher which events they're seeing. Is always kind of an interesting component to this too. This is really kind of the first chance we've had to really pick apart some of these like prospect lists, because the Tigers haven't really had prospects since prospect lists became a thing about 10 years ago. And so it's kind of interesting to be on this side of it and, you know, figure out where they're getting their reports from and, you know, what events they're seeing and stuff. But anyways, getting back to them, yeah, I'd be interested to see what Longenhagen has to say about some of these guys. I can't really think of anyone off the top of my head that was in the Arizona Fall League that he might have seen that would really, you know, appear high up on these lists. But, you know, I think he's seen a couple of these guys before, especially some of the guys that might have been traded to Detroit last year. Trying to think if there are any affiliates out that way that he might have seen a little bit more of. But they've certainly kind of... I don't necessarily want to say they have their own opinions of some of this. I mean, they haven't been too far off of some of the rest of baseball, but some of their reports are just so detailed. I think that I'm really interested to hear what they have to say, especially with both Longenhagen and McDaniel there now.
Yeah, and kind of what, you know, whatever, you know, Kylie McDaniel can kind of take away from working in, you know, a pretty progressive system that was, you know, and still is really, really good. And he's seen a lot of really good young talent, so...
He's seen a lot of good young talent. He apparently has connections all over the game. I think the quote that came out when Dave Cameron hired a new prospect analyst after McDaniel, I think his quote was something like, if we wanted someone with as many connections as Kylie has in the game, we'd have to hire an actual MLB general manager, you know, just to kind of indicate how plugged in this guy is. I always like it when they're able to kind of pick from their own independent sources. We've heard from some other outlets, hearing a lot from like team sources in particular, and those guys kind of having a little bit of an agenda when it comes to promoting their own prospects and whatnot. But if you can get independent reports and independent sources, that's obviously kind of the way to go.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, they've always done a really good job as far as like being really detailed in their analysis. And yeah, they're definitely well connected and know a lot of scouts. You know, something else we were kind of talking about on the site is just the fact that, you know, a lot of teams have kind of cut their scouting departments, and there's kind of a lot of scouts seems like veteran scouts floating around out there. And I know the Tigers have signed some of those guys, including some international scouts, and tried to add and bulk up the scouting department there. And it just kind of goes to, you know, just trying to draw in as many opinions and as many eyes as possible, because yeah, you just never know. Based on any one opinion, anyway. Everyone mm-hmm. seems to love Franklin Perez. I mean, Franklin Perez just seems to be, you know, pretty solidly just outside, you know, or just inside the top 50, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. And he's only, I think, what, 19 still? So,
yeah, 19, maybe just turning 20 right now. I'm trying to think exactly how old he was last year. Anyways, he's very young for the level. Sounds like he's very close to being a finished product, too. There's not a lot of development there left. I think that Mark Anderson from Tigstown and a bunch of other places has said that it's really kind of all about refinement and polish for him. And so we should, you know, almost undoubtedly see him at some point in 2019, probably.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not 2018. And he's probably not going to start the year in the majors in 2019, but he is almost certainly to be up at some point. So we should get a good glimpse of him relatively soon.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of who was in the Arizona Fall League, and I think, you know, like, the only guys I can really think of as far as pitchers especially are Spencer Turnbull, and I think Adam Ravenel was out there.
Yeah, I'd be kind of interested to see what they have to say about Turnbull, but, you know, given Fangraphs' predilection for only, you know, ranking 15 to 20 guys or so, Turnbull may not even be mentioned there.
Yeah, he's kind of in a weird situation because he just isn't, you know, he just hasn't pitched that much. You know, it kind of feels like he's, you know, fairly close to his projection as far as like what he's physically going to be capable of doing. He's already what, mm-hmm. 24 or 25, but yeah, he's just gotta just kind of stay on the field. I kind of have him as a sleeper to actually show up and maybe get himself a cup of coffee sometime this year, possibly as well. So
he feels like a guy they should really just move to the bullpen. I mean, this is a guy who, yeah, obviously there's, you know, a lot of potential there as a starter. This is a guy who can carry 97, 98 into the later innings, but some of the secondary stuff isn't quite there. And you wonder if you kind of just let him out, air it out in the bullpen, how high up he can get. Does he hit 97, 98? Does he get up to 100 with the secondary pitch? You know, that could be a real weapon if he adds a bit of stuff heading to the bullpen and can kind of develop that slider that he's always been fairly known for too.
Yeah, it's always been, yeah, at least graded, you know, average, if not, you know, flash and plus here and there. So yeah, you know, I could see that. You know, he and Sandy Baez are both guys I could kind of see that way, but Turnbull especially, because he's older, and he kind of has had some, it seems like, consistent shoulder issues over the past couple years. So yeah, we'll have to see if maybe they take that under advisement. But
I almost wonder if they would be a little bit slower to do that with Turnbull, because Baez was added to the 40-man roster, what, a year or two ago or something like that?
Yeah, they had to protect
Turnbull,
him.
Yeah. Turnbull, I think, was just added. And so they still have a couple years to play with him, because it sounds like if you give him another year in the rotation, especially like this year, if he's not coming up to the majors and he's not going to be used in, you know, high leverage situations in terms of like the team actually being in a playoff race, you almost, you know, are better off kind of giving him more starts as a starter down in the minors, and then, you know, flipping into the bullpen another year or two. I just think that he's going to eventually end up there, but I think there's no harm in keeping him as a starter right now.
Yeah, it kind of allows him to go out there and kind of pitch consistently, you know what he's doing every 5 days, and you know, and kind of get into a groove, hopefully. Yeah, it's just a question of health, but yeah, they've got time with him, whereas, yeah, Sandy Baez, it kind of feels like, you know, the fastball is huge, the splitter is good, but the command is still kind of an issue. So yeah, we'll just have to see if they decide to move him in a different direction this year. You know, overall, I mean, I think what I'm thinking is just that, obviously, we didn't have the prospects that we have now, but it's interesting to see the different takes on who is top 100. And it really feels like, you know, you could basically take four starting pitchers, Daz Cameron and Isaac Paredes, and even, you know, Kristen Stewart was on, I think, Keith Law's list right at the very bottom of the top 100, even last year. So that it just kind of shows the depth. Like, yeah, we don't have any top 30, you know, like, oh, this guy's an absolute blue chipper type pitcher or position player just yet. But the depth is, you know, even in that kind of mid-tier is really pretty good now.
It feels like they have maybe three or four that could go in the top 100, and then like another four on top of that that would go from 100 to 150.
Yeah, even Jake
like it
Rogers
feels like
kinda,
a lot
yeah.
of those guys are kind of sitting in that range. And I know that John Sickles at Minor League Ball does a top 200 every year, I think. I'm really interested to see where some of our guys land at that. I mean, you could have as many as, you know, if you include Stewart too, you can get up to like eight guys, nine guys, maybe in like that top 150 to 200.
Yeah. Yeah, even Dawell Lugo is kind of getting, you know, a little more love from some at least than I kind of thought. You know, he's kind of showed up, around 10 for some observers. So
he was up to 7 on Tigestown, I think.
Yeah, they were really high on him. Yeah,
they're really high on him, which is nice to see. They're kind of the ones leading the charge, saying that the transition to second base is going pretty well for him, which is nice to see. Sounds like he's, you know, the range is a little bit of an issue, and probably will be, especially as he kind of bulks up a little bit as he gets older.
Yeah.
But the hands and the throwing arm obviously plays there. I mean, he can play anywhere on the infield. And so at second base, he's going to have no problem getting the ball over to first. But it sounds like his hands and his footwork around the bag have been pretty good, too. I mean, this is kind of a guy who was, you know, still kind of hacking it as a shortstop, even getting into last year. So, you know, if he can handle second base capably as a defender, maybe develops a little bit more power. I don't think that the plate discipline is going to develop quite too much, but if he can at least, kind of be a little bit more selective and drive the ball a bit more, I mean, that's a solid guy to have. Maybe not, you know, a hugely valuable player, but someone who can at least carry their own weight for a couple of years, and then, you know, maybe develop into kind of that lower division starter, a number 6 and number 7, Jonathan Scope type.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a pretty good comp. I mean, yeah, from what I've read, you know, he makes pretty good contact. Like, he hits the ball, you know, pretty consistently hard. So, you know, a lot of it's on the ground. You know, there's obviously adjustments to be made. But, yeah, if he can start driving the ball up the gaps and hitting a few more out of the park, sometimes the walks just come, you know, just by virtue of pitchers, you know, learning to back off you a little bit. So,
and that's kind of the difference between him and, like, a Jonathan Scope type, is that Scope is hitting for a lot of power in-game. And Lugo might have some of that raw power, but he hits the ball on the ground so much that it really kind of mitigates that some.
Yeah. Yep, and, you know, he's kind of got a stiff, you know, lower half. I know Emily Walden, our buddy over at The Athletic, and a few other people have kind of mentioned that's something that they're trying to work on with getting a little bit more leverage out of his legs. So, yeah, there's at least a raw product to work there that's still, you know, pretty valuable, and maybe a little better than people thought, when the J.D. Martinez trade went down. Obviously, none of us were super, super stoked on that trade. I'm not really sure what you could have gotten for J.D. Martinez that would have made anybody happy to see J.D. Martinez traded and gone, but...
No, certainly not. I mean, I would have liked to see if they could have picked up Anthony Banda, a lefty who was their top prospect at the time,
who
ended up coming up later in the year, but it sounds like they just weren't going to be able to pull him. And so getting a guy like Lugo, you know, if he turns into something at the major league level, if he's a starter for a couple of years, that's a, you know, a pretty solid return on that. And then you have two other guys in Alcantara and Jose King down there who could eventually turn into something too.
Yeah, both of them, you know, very athletic. Like, Alcantara maybe a little bit too undersized to ever really hit much, but you know, really gets, you know, rave reviews for his glove. And
he sounds like a carbon copy of Dixon Machado.
He really does.
He?
Yeah, like a switch hitting Dixon Machado, which, you know, you can have one of those guys on a playoff team down the road, and that's a pretty valuable guy to have. So yeah, it's just really a question of, like, hitting these next two drafts. I mean, we've talked about this enough on the site, but, you know, that's really, for everything that's gone on over the past year, you know, the draft this year is really job number one. So
yeah,
and I did see Alavila's comments today that they were already kind of getting ready to convene on like sort of early assessments of who they want to take number one. So they're definitely on that, and obviously they realize how important it is.
Yeah, and they want to make sure too that they're getting a good deal out of it, unless someone really kind of establishes themselves as a clear 1-1 pick. You almost kind of want to kind of shop around a little bit. Like, the last couple of years, you've seen teams look for the right deal. I think that when the Twins took, was his name, Royce Lewis last year?
Yeah.
People kind of assumed that he had taken a little bit of a below market deal so that they can spread the bonus pool money around elsewhere. That I think that if there's no real clear cut number one, the Tigers should definitely look to do that, whether it's taking, you know, a position player or a pitcher. It doesn't really matter. If you can get a solid guy at number one who, you know, maybe he's a number three or number four guy on everyone's board, but if he signs for below slot money, and then you can use that money elsewhere to pick up another Sam McMillan or some other high schooler who is looking to go to college but can be swayed by, you know, a few $100,000, then you obviously got to explore that too.
Yeah, obviously the Astros have done that. I mean, they took Carlos Correa, who I think was projected to go like fifth or sixth, and signed him under slot. And I believe they got Lance McCullers as a result of that as well in the second round. And my God, that's a haul.
Yeah, that's worked out.
That's the dream.
A little bit.
Yeah, really.
Not too bad.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at Lance McCullers' strikeout rates last year. Like, you know, somebody mentioned to me that he should be a Cy Young candidate this year. And, you know, he's had too many kind of injury concerns to really pitch the innings. But I didn't realize what his strikeout to walk ratio looked like, and it's insane.
What is he? He's either their fifth starter.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he kind of is their fifth starter or their swing. Maybe he's their fourth. I don't know.
Maybe their fourth. Like, who else is in the rotation? Obviously, you have Verlander, you have Keuchel, you have Gerrit Cole, you have him, you have Charlie Morton. You know, Brad Peacock is going to come out of the bullpen and come out of nowhere with a ridiculous strikeout again. I don't understand how that happened. They probably have like two other guys I'm forgetting about too. That's a
Colin McHugh. Yeah.
Yeah, Colin McHugh. Like, geez.
Like, he'd be our number two starter. You know, if
right?
you brought him over here. Yeah, it's just a wealth of riches over there, and everybody's raving about Forrest Whitley as well. So they're pretty loaded for bear. Still got Paulino and Martez. Ugh.
Yeah, Whitley does kind of sting a little bit. This is a guy who was drafted the same year as Matt Manning, and is already kind of coming up through the system, looking like an absolute monster. And so, you know, I obviously don't necessarily want to. You know, I'm not writing Manning off yet, but, you know, having
but he was
Forrest
always
going to
take a long time. Yeah,
he was always going to take a long time, but having Whitley right there would be kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to have Forrest Whitley. Absolutely. Despite being a big Matt Manning fan. So, all right, well, you know, we're going to be putting out at Bless You Boys our prospect list sometime in early February, and we'll be covering the prospects, you know, extensively all year. Like, this, you know, this is a huge push in terms of the coverage now, mainly because it's the most interesting part of the Tigers.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, this is the part we want to talk about the most.
Yeah, this is what we're most into. But for the time being, yeah, we'll leave it there. I wanted to ask you about the piece you wrote about the MLBPA, the Players Union, and Rob Manfred regarding the pitch clock. Because Manfred obviously is pushing very hard to put the pitch clock in play this year. They had it in the minors last year. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like, you know, Tony Clark is at least trying to hold a line there. You want to go into that and yeah, just kind of break down what you were talking about in that?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure exactly how this is kind of playing out because, you know, Rob Manfred has said like he's going to implement a pitch clock. And apparently there's something in the CBA that allows him to basically make a rule if he's given the MLBPA a year's worth of advance. And they had talked about this last year. And so it sounds like, you know, he has given them that year's notice. And he can kind of just come in and say like, okay, we're doing a pitch clock now. Whether the MLBPA likes it or not. Now, obviously, they've come out against it, but I argue that they should be doing that because they've kind of lost so much ground in other areas over the last, you know, couple rounds of negotiations, and especially in terms of like, you know, free agent compensation and basically the amount of revenue that they're getting in the game, because that's kind of fallen off considerably over the last several years. And so, you know, obviously they're still making money hand over fist, but I mean, you know, the owners are making Scrooge McDuck levels of money right now. I mean, they're literally like swimming in their piles of gold coins.
And no one wants to sign any big free agents.
And no one wants to sign any big free agents. So between, you know, teams getting smarter and realizing how inefficient free agency is, as well as the kind of the influx of money in the game, that has really kind of left a lot of people upset. Both the players, and it sounds like the players had kind of argued, especially in this last round of CBA negotiations, that it was almost like more quality of life stuff that they were after, like, you know, extra off days and, you know, a chef in the clubhouse and things that sound stupid to us. But like, if you're doing that every single day, you know, they're important things. And especially like if you're doing that every single day and still making $15 million a year, like what's that extra few million compared to, you know, having, you know, just a better quality of life over the 6, 7, 8 months that you're working.
Yeah. And I think it can be easy for people to forget that, you know, players aren't in the army, you know, like half the time they're, you know, some of them at least are very wealthy people living in, you know, nice places. And then when they're on the road, all of a sudden you're traveling with the team and you guys are all packed together and on a very strict schedule. So yeah, you know, asking for a few things to sort of kind of make that easier on them or, you know, make their quality of life better while kind of going through some of those long road trips and stuff like that all makes sense. It's just that kind of while they were getting those things, it just felt like the owners were kind of going out the back door with the loot as far as getting, you know, the salary tax, threshold, you know, kind
of
changed.
Yeah, and I think that's
the
part of it too, is that
rates.
the tax rates and the threshold have become a little more severe. And so you have all these big money teams trying to get underneath it. And I had argued before that, you know, the teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers don't necessarily need a lot of help. And so that they haven't signed any free agents this winter isn't damning them in that regard so much as it is like, you know, they could, okay, they could sign another fifth starter, but they could also save themselves a lot of money by getting underneath the tax threshold, as well as, you know, eliminating the penalties that come with like draft pick compensation and some of these other things that are, you know, more important, I think, than the actual money itself. And so, you know, it's tough to see, like, especially like a team like the Giants in particular, I'm thinking of, that they're trying to get underneath the tax threshold and stay under that when they could really use another piece. They could really stand to go out and get another starter, whether it's Darvish or someone a little bit lower down the pole like Lance Lynn or Alex Cobb. They really need a starter, but they're not going out and doing it because of this tax threshold. And I think it's ultimately hurting players more than it is helping increase parity across the game.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like it's resulted in more have and have not than actually kind of, you know, kind of brought the two sides together. Some of that, though, you know, I think people have to just look at it honestly and say, you know, teams are just getting smarter, and even the teams that, you know, are not spending very much money, they're doing that for reasons. You know, the Astros just kind of showed what can happen if you just don't invest in your team at all for a few years, collect all the top draft picks that you can, and then you start spending, and you've got like the whole pump primed, to use a Donald Trump coined expression. But, you know, you've got all this stockpile of prospects, and then you can start spending if you want to. You can make the deals that you want. And it just feels like there isn't that much incentive to be a team that's sort of a 500 team that maybe has a shot. You know, the Giants are kind of a unique case because they're, you know, they're getting older, and this is kind of their last gasp. So spending some money, you can kind of see that. But they still need an outfielder as well as a pitcher. You know, they got Austin Jackson, but they apparently don't really want to start him as their center fielder, which still leaves Lorenzo Cain out there just staring him in the face, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what the Giants do. They have a prospect named Steven Duggar right now, who is kind of their center fielder of the future. They're hoping this is a guy with what sounds like a plus glove. The bat maybe might not quite be there. And it could be a platoon situation between him and Jackson in center, because he's left-handed. It could be that they want to leave him down in the minors. I've been reading a lot of Grant Brisby lately because he's brilliant. This is how I know all of this. It's interesting to see, you know, that I think the Giants are playing it right with Jackson and kind of using him more as like a super fourth outfielder, as Brisby has said, because in particular you have a couple of older guys in the corners and a couple of guys in the corners who are going to be playing new positions in those corners. And so between that and wanting to keep them healthy, I think Brisby also referenced that the last couple times they've been to the World Series, it has been, you know, very much on the back of one of those good fourth outfielders, Gregor Blanco in particular, I think he's referencing. And so having a guy like that in Jackson is, you know, hugely important. Obviously, they still need a starter because their rotation is Bumgarner, Cueto, maybe Jeff Samardzija, and then who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, they're an interesting one to follow. And, you know, you kind of talk about this whole, like, middle class of baseball that is mostly evaporated. And it almost kind of has me wondering, like, what would have happened if the Tigers had kept on – if the Tigers have held on to Ian Kinsler earlier this offseason and then gone out and spent on, you know, a couple outfielders, maybe like a Curtis Granderson type or Austin Jackson or Jerod Dyson, who's still out there, and just kind of filled a couple of those holes. You know, you still sign, like, Mike Fiers or someone to shore up the rotation. Maybe you spend a little bit more on, like, Alex Cobb or something.
Yeah.
And they kind of try to sneak into the playoffs that way. I mean, obviously, a lot has to go right there. I mean, with that, you can maybe bump their projection up. Like, if with a couple of additions, you can maybe bump their projection up to somewhere in the 75 to 80 win range. And so that's obviously not great. But if you look at some of these projections right now, I mean, that still puts them in, like, the top half of baseball.
Yeah.
Because there are so many petite teams that are just kind of trying to tank right now.
And they're playing in a division, you know, that has a couple of those teams. You know, obviously the White Sox and the Royals are in similar shape as the Tigers. So, yeah, if they had made, you know, kind of some of those small moves, you know, and then you get, you know, maybe Daniel Norris or Matt Boyd kind of figures it out and has a solid year as a starter. Miggy's healthy. You just never know. You know, you might have a chance to sneak in. So, yeah, it is kind of interesting the way things played out.
I'm looking at Fangraphs right now, and there are only 12 teams projected for a winning record this year. And obviously projections are, you know, very conservative, but, and you have another few teams that are kind of right around the 500 mark, but only 12 teams projected to go 500, whereas you have probably just as many that are projected to win about 75 games, if not fewer. And so, you know, if you could kind of sneak into that area there and just, you know, do something, maybe you get a little bit lucky, then you get into playoffs, and then who knows what happens. Obviously, it's a long shot, but with what little they got in return for Kinsler, it almost kind of, you know, it does kind of make me wonder, like, what would have happened if they had done something like that?
Yeah, because
it would have made the season fun, at least.
I know, that's it. You know, it's always hard to tell if there's any real reason to do that, or if it would just be, you know, a lot more entertaining to watch rather than kind of having the fans come out to watch. Yeah, what looks like a team that might be okay in the first half, but is probably going to keep trading players and very likely kind of stumble down the finish the way they did this year. So,
yeah, I mean, and that's fine, but like at the same time, like you're kind of giving it a go. I think people would feel a lot better about the team. You'd probably get more people at the ballpark, certainly more people at like Tigers Fest this weekend because of that. And, you know, maybe you sneak in, maybe you still end up in the same place. You know, it sounds like the worst case scenario for that would be like you end up with the number 5 pick instead of the number 3 pick in next year's draft. You know, because with that, you're not giving up big prospects. I mean, maybe you could have gone out and topped the deal that landed Andrew McCutchen in San Francisco or something like that. But even with some low-cost free agent upgrades, especially with the way this market has played out, this could be just a little bit more competitive of a team that hasn't impacted the team's ability to rebuild at all. I mean, yeah, you have a couple of outfielders you could get sneak in there for some playing time, but I don't think that Gerber and Stewart are really going to be affected too much if they go another year in the minors without seeing much major league action.
Yeah. And as we've seen, you know, you almost always need a few guys to come up and fill in at some points anyway. So it still wouldn't be, you know, too onerous to get them a cup of coffee somewhere. And, you know, Ashley and I talked about this on one of the first episodes, just that it is kind of funny to look at the Tigers farm system right now and think what players we could actually trade for. You know, there is enough depth there to get a piece that could help you down the stretch should the Tigers get to, you know, July and kind of be still kind of hanging around in there. So, yeah, it's just kind of interesting. Just a hypothetical, and maybe it's just our way of kind of squirming out of having to kind of focus on the fact that the team is not going to be good. It's going to be a bit of a rough go. So,
yeah, I mean, they're still projected to finish third in the division right now. So
I'd be stoked just to put down the Royals. You know, I know everybody wants the number one pick and all that, but you know, we've got the number one pick this year. As long as we're picking relatively high the next couple of years, I don't really think that's something we don't need to actually like desperately tank, I don't think, to turn this thing around, assuming the Tigers know what they're doing and get a little lucky.
I mean, I'll take another number one pick, but if they're, you know, if they do want to compete and make this season a little bit more fun, I'm fine with that too. There's really not a lot for them to do right now. I mean, you can come out and compete a little bit, you can come out and tank the season if you want, but a lot of it falls down to, can they develop the prospects in the system right now? Can they add to that in this draft? Can they supplement that with, you know, a solid trade or two when the time comes? They just need to be able to develop these guys more than anything.
Yeah, and just to whether or not they can get, you know, a little bit more, or hopefully a good deal more out of the guys that are already, you know, on the team and are still young and still have, you know, some unfulfilled potential. You know, there's still Castellanos, there's still Boyd and Norris. We still need to kind of see what happens when Fulmer comes back. And, you know, the Tigers have quite a few good relief arms that we saw last year, and they didn't really do all that well. But you look at Zach Reiniger, Jairo Laborte, Joe Jimenez, you know, all of them are flawed. They all have typical young reliever issues, but they all also have, you know, excellent stuff. And, you know, those will be guys that we can also watch this year, kind of to give us at least a little bit of taste maybe of what the future Tigers roster will look like when this is all hopefully turned back around. And, all right, we're going to switch it over before we wrap it up. And I've got a couple questions off of Twitter, so I'll shoot a couple of these your way. Robert Schroeder at MR Schroeds with 2 Z's asks, he has a question about pitching prospects and wants to know, normally at what age does a pitcher's fastball peak? For example, can a 22-year-old still improve on the speed of his fastball? You want to take that one?
off the top of my head, I want to say it's around 25 is where, you know, fastball velocity peaks. And from 22 to 25, I don't think you're going to develop too much. It kind of depends on the player. You know, if they're still kind of adding to their frame a little bit, they can. But in particular, like our 20 to 22-year-olds, in the system, Bo Burrows, Franklin Perez, and Alex Viedo. I think all three of them are probably pretty close to maxed out in terms of fastball velocity. Maybe we'll see what happens with Viedo if he cleans up his mechanics a little bit. But those other two are pretty much finished in terms of like physical development, and it's more about refinement for them at this point. And so we probably won't see them add too much. You could see Manning even maybe adding a little bit as he gets older, or at least getting to a point where it's a little bit more consistent from him. Obviously, he can reach back for that 97, and you know, but if he's able to kind of refine his mechanics and make it a little bit easier to get to that point, you know, that's certainly kind of what they want.
Yeah, and he's still, you know, he's still, I think, you know, 6'6", 210 pounds. So that's a guy, you look at his frame, and there's still muscle that can be added there without, you know, kind of bulking him up and kind of hurting his flexibility and all that. And it comes down to the frame. And sometimes you do see someone, you know, change a little something with their mechanics and gain a mile per hour or two, even beyond age 25. You know, Charlie Morton this year pretty much said he just went out there and tried to throw harder. Like he just hadn't really ever focused on it. And bam, you know, he adds a mile an hour or two. But yeah, it seems like by the time you're 22, you're roughly where you're going to be. And there's maybe, you know, another mile per hour or two in there at best. You know, you're probably not going to, you know, suddenly go from throwing 91 to 98, 99. But you never know. There are always exceptions to these things. The next question was, should any of the Tigers starters this year pitch more than 175 innings? And that comes from Ed Miller at EdMiller19. It's basically, you know, should the Tigers basically shut everybody down at some point, assuming they even get to the point where they have a bunch of guys who can throw 175 innings?
Yeah, I don't know if anyone should be throwing 175 innings this year, in part because, I mean, the minor league season isn't long enough for a lot of pitchers to get up to that point. I think 150 to 160 is really kind of the max, and that's if you're coming out and throwing quite a bit. You know, if we're talking about major league pitchers, I mean, yeah, you just kind of let them throw as much as they can. Norris and Boyd should be able to shoulder that load if they're pitching well enough. Fulmer has already kind of reached that point, and so that's fine. I don't necessarily think you take the gloves or you handle anyone really with kid gloves. So, you know, let them loose.
Yeah, it seems like if a guy's pitching well, it's late in the season and he's coming up on, you don't want a hard limit there. You know, when someone's going good and their muscle memory is kind of where you want it to be, you want them to keep pitching as long as they're all right. So really, it just seems to come down to, you know, like the relationship, you know, Ron Gardenhire and Chris Bosio can build, you know, with the pitching staff. There's got to be trust and communication there. You know, we kind of saw, you know, a few comments today about Mikey Matuk, you know, having a late season injury that he didn't bring up. And the Tigers not really knowing quite how severe, you know, Miguel Cabrera's bat condition was at various points. And that's, you know, that's really only something that can be addressed by, you know, getting that kind of communication between the player and the coaching staff. So, you know, as long as Gardenhire and Bosio are successful doing that and they feel comfortable, you know, letting Fulmer go 200 or what have you, I'll be perfectly happy to see a couple of these guys throw 175 innings.
Yeah, I mean, if they get up that high, I mean, I think that's a good sign for the Tigers in that they're pitching well, they're staying healthy. And so I think you let them go. There's also something that kind of building up some of that stamina over a full season to be able to shoulder that load. You know, 175, 180 innings is kind of the precursor to getting up to that 200 inning mark. You don't want a guy shutting down at 160 and then going up to 200 immediately the next year. And so I don't think there's any real harm, you know, as long as you're paying attention to everyone, of course. There's no real harm in letting them go past that 175 mark.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to have a hard kind of cap either. Paul Sebastian Oz at P_Sebastian_Oz with two Z's asks, who are the five, you know, the five guys most likely to make their MLB debuts as Tigers this year? Which is kind of a fraught question. He actually already mentioned kind of some of the big ones like Brian Garcia, Gerber, and Stewart. I wanted to ask you that question just because I know you were kind of bringing up the fact that maybe Lugo might actually kind of get a look this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd be one to get a little bit of a look this year. You know, obviously the Tigers are a little bit thin in the infield, and I think that if he hits well in AAA, they'll probably bring him up at some point, even just to let him get his feet wet, or especially if Jose Iglesias is traded. I mean, there's not much harm in, like, let's say Iglesias gets traded at the July deadline. There's not much harm, you know, if Lugo's hitting well, to bring him up for August and September and let him hit a little bit and see how it goes. And so I think he'd be one, obviously Garcia, probably a host of other bullpen arms will be coming up too. We could see Mark Ecker. I know there's another one that couple of people in our site have been relatively high on over the last few years. I'm trying to think of any other relievers, because a lot of them made their debuts last year in like Laborde and some of those guys that you didn't really expect. And they had quite a few come through.
Yeah, and a few minor league signings like Kevin Comer, Mark Montgomery. I'm not sure if those guys pitched in the majors yet, honestly. So you never know. You know, we're not expecting a whole lot out of those guys, but possibly one of them. But when you see like Laborde and, you know, and Jimenez and some of these guys move all the way from the Florida State League, and make their major league debut last year, it's really hard to guess. I mean, you can go all the way down to A-ball last year, and you never know, someone might just take off. You know, if somebody's command, like Eduardo Jimenez or, you know, Gerson Moreno figures it out.
Yeah, I was going to say Moreno could be one that could make his debut this year, so
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. You know, there's some of the college starters, too. I think, you know, you could see Turnbull or maybe Tyler Alexander if they're going well, but in general, the big prospects you're probably still not going to see till next year at the earliest. The last one was from Field Diamond, and this question is just evil at this point, but how many wins for the Tigers this year? Just give me your best guess at it right now.
What did they win last year? 64?
Yeah, I think it was
64. I mean, I think this team is going to be better. I think just by like pure dumb luck, they'll be better, because they were fairly unlucky last year, both in terms of injuries as well as in terms of like their Pythagorean win expectancy. I mean, they were about like 6 or 7 wins shy of what they should have been. And so, I mean, between that, some of the, you know, kind of development, maybe the bullpen being a little bit better, I could see them sneaking up closer to 70.
Yeah, I think I said 69 when Ashley and I talked the other night, and I'll just take that nice number and stick with that, because I still think, I agree the Tigers will probably look better than some are expecting in the first half, but I still think there's a chance, like, some of these guys could get traded, and you never know if, you know, maybe somebody finally just kind of ponies up and comes after Michael Fulmer really, really hard at the deadline. That might be something that kind of undercuts, you know, what kind of win total.
I'm going to revise mine a little bit. I'm going to say like 74, because I think they're going to come out of the gate relatively hot. People are going to be all about Ron Gardenhire as the manager and like the great white hope and helping this team kind of improve a little bit. And then they're going to fall off after that. So they'll be the kind of like the team that comes out, like they'll be leading the AL Central at the end of April and then fall off after that. People were like, because like, remember, it was the White Sox last year, a couple years ago, where they were like leading the Central, leading it, getting into May, and then fell apart after that.
Yeah,
that's kind of what I think the Tigers are going to do that this year.
Yeah, and they've kind of had a history. You know, there's a lot of new faces and stuff, but it seems like every year under Brad Ausmus' tenure as well, like they got out to a pretty nice start, at least the first few weeks, and then just kind of just fell apart from there. Anybody who wants to know what happened to the Tigers last year, I mean, you really just look at May. I think Nick Castellanos had a 34 WRC plus in that month, despite hitting the crap out of the ball. You know, and then you had the K-Rod stuff.
And that was the month that we had pointed out, you know, going back to whenever the schedule came out in 2016. I mean, they had, I want to say, like 28 or 29 games in 31 days, and like 8 of them were at home.
Yeah.
And so we circled that like right away and said, like, this is going to be a problem month. And at the end of it, you know, I actually was relatively optimistic. You know, I thought that they had gotten through it for the most part, and they kind of kept their heads above water. I think they had one series down in Houston.
Yeah.
Coming out of that. And then like in June, it all fell apart. They went on that road trip and just stunk up the joint.
Yeah.
Out west, they were bad at home too. And so I think June, more than anything, is what killed them. That should have been when they had kind of taken a step forward and, you know, gotten back above 500 and into contention, and they just fell flat.
Yeah, it just felt like there was just some bad juju going on there. You know, there was some contention in the clubhouse or something, and yeah, and just some guys, you know, just struggled that month for whatever reason, and they could never pick it up. I know Ian Kinsler just tanked that month. Verlander was struggling, walking people left and right, and yeah, they just never turned it around. I think the season kind of ended on that West Coast trip where they finished up against the Padres and got swept, I believe, and lost just about all three of those games in the late innings. Like had
it really, that really kind of felt like where they lost it.
Yeah, yep, it was ugly then. So, all right, that's enough questions for the week. We're gonna wrap it up, and we will be back next Tuesday with another episode. And I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And check us out on Bless You Boys. There's a lot of new coverage coming up. We've got a lot of stuff on the prospect list that have been released over the past week. We'll keep talking about that. We'll have our own coming. And I've also, I've got that interview with Matt Manning that I'll be transcribing hopefully tonight. And I will have that up on the site for you guys tomorrow. So Rob, thanks for joining me. Have a good night. Talk to you
shortly.
Thanks
for having me.
Yeah, no problem, man. Have a good night.